and welcome to David's Book Talk. And today we have a very interesting discussion called, from a book called Mortuary Confidential, Undertakers Spill the Dirt. And here to discuss this book is Kenneth McKenzie and Todd Hara. Hello.
Hi.
Hi, guys. Can you hear me?
I can.
Okay. This is a very interesting subject we're talking about. I've never discussed this on any of my interviews before, so I'm really excited about it. And I really enjoyed this book immensely. I found myself reading it over the weekend and not being able to put it down. Just because the stories are so, I mean, they're true, which makes them even more interesting. How did you guys...
You can't make this stuff up.
No, absolutely not. I'm sure you both have some wonderful stories that aren't even in the book.
Oh, yeah. You know, we just picked some highlights from different people across the country that we thought would stand out. But, yeah, some stories aren't fit to print.
Yeah, I can imagine the ones that aren't fit to print. When you were telling me on the phone the other day about another one that wasn't fit, somebody who wrote a book about that, the stories that are kind of off color and not for everyone, shall we say. But these are pretty...
I wouldn't say off color. It's a little more graphic than this book.
Graphic, yeah.
What we're trying to show is the lighter side of our industry, and so that people understand that, you know, this is a really serious subject, but laughing gets the same emotion out that crying does, and honestly, unusual, funny, unique things happen in our business every day, things that just you could never imagine that could get, and I'm not creative enough to make that stuff up.
Well, if you didn't have funny things, I mean, what would it be like? If you were serious all the time, would you be able to do what you do?
No. I wouldn't die, absolutely. You get to a point where it's so serious, and it's not that you laugh at the fact that somebody has passed away, but with the family, you can find humor in circumstances around arranging the services.
Right.
Typically, it's things like a gentleman the other day that came in that was a computer tech, and he's on hospice, and he's about to pass away, and we're trying to input his information in the computer, and it kept shutting down. And so I went in and I said, his name happened to be Ken, and I said, does Ken have something to do with computers? And they go, yeah, why? And I go, well, he doesn't want to go because he keeps booting me out. So we had to hand write everything. So it's finding those stories that kind of helps them.
Yeah, it sounds, you have to, I mean, that's why life is so much fun, because you have the comedy moments, you have the serious parts. And I mean, if everything were serious, I just can't imagine what life would be like. If you could never joke around. But, I mean, these are all very serious stories, and some of them are the more memorable ones. I mean, I made a list of about 15 here that I read that it really stuck with me, because they were so...
What was your favorite?
My favorite? I think my favorite is probably... Well, like the one with the bird is really...
I hear that a lot.
That one really, and the guy, the screamer, that sticks out in my mind too, because it's I think it's the first story of the book, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
With the screaming.
David, just to back up and clarify, which bird story? The one where the hearse runs over the dove, or the dead bird in the freezer?
No, I was referring to the bird's ashes and the fact that the dog ate the bird.
Oh, yeah.
That's the one I meant, but those.
The dog ate the bird after a year and a half of saving it, so it's like that was just the funniest part to me.
Yeah, it is. It's one of those stories that you're like, I can't imagine what somebody would go through knowing it happened, and you have to tell the person, and then you don't have to tell the person. So it's like, one of these here I wrote down. It was a 275-pound angry man. Yeah, I remember that one. I'm writing notes to myself, and I'm trying to remember the whole stories because they, you know. It's hard to remember every one, but what are your favorites? If you had to pick one or two that are your favorites.
Would you say serious or... Because I think that the stories can be divided into two distinct categories. There's, you know, the poignant ones, and then there's the ones that have, you know, a little bit of humor in them. So, you know, definitely... My favorite poignant one would be A Hug of Hope. You know, that one just really, talks to me and speaks to me in some way. I think it, you know, gets down to that basic, you know, human thing that you can do something for somebody else, just in small ways every day, you know, just going about your usual life. You don't have to make these huge, grand gestures to make a difference in other people's lives.
Absolutely.
You know, for me, that's just like a really powerful thing that we can do for each other as humans.
Now, we have to tell you, none of these stories actually happened to you guys, right?
We each contributed a couple.
A couple of them did happen to you guys.
Yes.
I was under the impression they all happened to other people, other undertakers and funeral. What is the difference? We should clarify that. What is the difference between an undertaker and a funeral director?
Well, undertaker is just the old term that undertaker did everything from building the casket, picking up the body, and preparing the body. It's just an older term. And now a funeral director is someone that would meet with families and arrange services and conduct services. A mortician, to me, is more of a person than an embalmer and the funeral director. An embalmer, of course, is someone that prepares the bodies for viewing and that sort, is licensed to do so, and then also licensed to do funerals and meet with families.
Mm-hmm. Good. I mean, you needed to clarify that. Now, I wasn't even sure myself what the difference was. But all over the United States, I mean, there must be, I don't know, how many thousand funeral directors are there?
I have no idea. Well, if you think about the amount of states, how many funeral homes, how many employees, we're talking about tens of thousands. I would say usually over 100,000.
Right.
Yeah.
And do they actually have like... Yeah. I mean, do you actually go to like... Are there conventions for this kind of thing too?
Yeah.
Are there?
I laugh because, yeah. Whenever I watch people in a lobby when they check into a hotel and it says, "Oh, welcome, funeral director." Who cares?
Right.
Yeah, they have big conventions. That actually, we did a calendar a few years ago called Men of Mortuaries, and we unveiled that calendar at one of those conventions in Las Vegas.
What? How did that go over?
Directors checking out new hearses, new products, new things that are coming out in the industry to help families.
So why do you two do it? I mean, what is it about this job that drew you to it?
We were talking a little bit about this earlier on the phone, David, and, you know, you were kind of under the misconception that, you know, you're dealing with doom and gloom day in and day out. And yes, people come in and it's, you know, not one of the more pleasant days in their lives, but, you know, you're getting to help people in a time of need and do something for them. And, you know, that's, I really enjoy being able to, you know, guide people, you know, through this stage of a loved one's life, you know, their final stage. And really, I also do it because, you know, it's not a desk job. You know, I'm doing different things, I'm in different places,
right.
You know, meeting with different people every day. So no day is exactly the same. It's not like, oh my gosh, I got to go and sit in my cubicle and stare at a computer screen for 8 hours. You know, you're outside, you're inside, you're all over. So I really like that aspect of the job too.
That's an interesting way to look at it. I have a job where I stare at a screen a lot of the day too, and it does get to you after a while. And it, sometimes you don't even realize. Do you feel the same way, Ken?
I got interested in this when I was 12. My dad committed suicide, and I just got fascinated with how our family was a unit put together. My father actually said to me, "Drop me off at the city pool," and said, "I'll see you tomorrow." And that was the last time I saw him. I did see him the next day, but he was in a casket. And it just was like, you know, he had just shot himself, and it was quick and it was painful. But what made me deal with it was the woman that owned the funeral home that took care of my father. They had dated briefly in high school. So this woman, the funeral director, came to me when I was crying and gently pulled my hair from behind, and I looked at her and I go, "What? Man, what are you doing?" She goes, "That's what your dad did to me every day in school," and I would turn around and yell and hit him, and I got sent out to the hall. And it made me laugh because that was my dad, and it was cool that she was able to make me laugh at a moment I thought I would never laugh again. And I think that's where the seed was planted there for me, and I cannot see doing anything else at all. This isn't a job.
So you two have to be compassionate.
Yeah, I do have that side to me.
Right. I mean, and for a man, you know, we all know that, I mean, men in general are not known for their compassion a lot of times, I think. I mean, a lot of people I know, or friends that I have, are, I wouldn't say they're the most compassionate people I've ever had in my life.
But you're probably not funeral directors either, huh?
Yeah, probably not. But this, I mean, nobody goes into this job thinking it's going to be fun, do they?
It's not really fun, but a lot of people have always come to me and said, I've just always been fascinated or interested.
I agree.
What do you think?
Same thing all the time.
Right. What do you guys think is the worst part of the job?
If I can share with just what happened with trying to do this interview, is having things set up in your life.
Right.
Things aside, and everything's fine, and then somebody passes away, which this is why we're in this industry. And you're called to the hospital, and your family needs more time in the room. And that's sometimes frustrating, but you have to be so understanding. When's the moment that you have to say, okay, it's time for me? You can't. You need to have that family, let them have that closure. I mean, our interview started late because I was stuck at a hospital.
Right.
And that's really what happens. That, to me, is the worst.
Yeah, I can imagine. That must be rough. And it's keeping your cool about it all the time. I mean, it's not easy to keep your cool all the time. But, I mean, in your business, you have to be that way. But that doesn't mean that going through it is an easy process. Do you have the same problem, Todd, sometimes? Does that happen to you, too?
Let me just draw in one of the chapters from the book. You know, it's chapter 47, called The First Date. That's about my wife and my first date. And it's the same exact thing. You know, our first date, we sit down and, you know, the food is hitting the table and my pager goes off. And, you know, I said, well, I gotta go, and off I went. You know, so it's definitely frustrating at times.
It's probably why she married you, because she was more interested that you took off.
And you actually married this girl, really? That really happened?
Yes. Yes. But the best part was, you know, her dad is very you know, kind of sarcastic, a dry sense of humor. She got home and he said, well, you know, I get to see the date went well. You know, there are services that guys can sign up for, and if the date's not going well, they can get a call and get out of it, act like they have somewhere to be.
Right.
Well, okay. So.
That was one of the stories I was going to mention. That's a pretty memorable one, too. I mean, you can actually see. That's what I like about these stories. They're all short enough where they never get boring. I mean, they're always interesting. So if with each story, each story is so different from the one before, and you don't quite know where it's going, and then all of a sudden you realize, uh-oh, or, you know, somebody...
That's honestly the best way to describe what you walk into to the mortuary each day when you look at your board or what has happened the night before. And like Todd was talking earlier, you have no idea what's going to be in front of you. To me, each family is like a small soap opera that's going on. And you follow that family from the moment they walk in till the moment that you say goodbye at the cemetery to them. So it's honestly like the book. I got Mortuary Confidential, you go through it, you don't know what you're about to hit. It's really what happens in our industry.
Yeah, I should say that the book is published by Citadel Press, the Mortuary Confidential. It is in paperback, so it's a nice, inexpensive purchase. But everybody who picks this up and reads it is going to be, I mean, you're going to be surprised. These are not depressing stories. I didn't find any of them very, very depressing. I mean, there are little points where, I mean, death, let's face it, death is depressing at some point, but there's no really depressing theme running through this book, really.
Right.
I mean,
because the book isn't about the dead, per se. It's about the people's lives who work with the dead. And it's like our take on our profession. You know, so it's a very lively book, if you will. It's all our, you know, interesting little, you know, how we view this industry. So there's 50 little facets to this. There's 50 different points of views in here.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's, you know, what you're saying, David, is what makes it so interesting. You know, the reader gets 50 different little viewpoints, little interesting tidbits they might have never thought about, hey, this is something these people do.
Yeah. I just wonder, you know, you have, like I said, we were saying before, you have to be pretty upbeat all the time when you're dealing with these things, and you're dealing with the family, and to keep up a front like that every time, I guess you get used to it after a while. To me, you know, to think of dealing with that, it would be tough for me because it's just not my thing. Do you guys have do you need medical degrees to be a funeral person? I mean, do you have to know anything medical?
In California, you have to serve a 2-year apprenticeship under a license at Ballmer.
Mm-hmm.
Your listeners, if there's a lot of people listening to this, these interviews because you're interested in our field, I totally recommend that you do an apprenticeship first before you go to school. An apprenticeship puts you right into the doorstep of what you actually would be doing if you had already finished school. You're actually embalming, working under a licensed embalmer. And then in California, there's a school for mortuary science that takes about a year and a half. So it's about a little under a 4-year program in California. And Todd's in Delaware, so can you tell us about that?
Yeah, tell us about Delaware.
It's you know, you go to a mortuary school, which, like Ken said, depending on, you know, how many credits you take, it's a year and a half, 2 years. But Delaware, you serve your apprenticeship or internship after you go to school. And it's a year-long apprenticeship, so you do about a 3-year program. But in mortuary school, you know, you take courses on, you know, anatomy, pathology, you know, and it's certainly not a medical degree, but you learn all about the different diseases, pathogens, and, you know, functions of a healthy and diseased body.
Right. So would you say you guys are fascinated by the human body to begin with? I mean, is that part of the allure of the job, too?
For me, that had nothing to do with why I got into it. But then when I got into mortuary college and I understood how it worked, how the body works, it really just fascinated me how our body repairs itself, how remarkable it really is, but that's not what drew me to it.
It just
kind of came along with it.
Right.
Really, it's about the caregiving of the families is what drew me, and then working with the deceased came with that, and then I realized I was good at it, and I saw how it helped the family. So really, this whole thing is about the family, not the deceased. Caring for somebody, for his family.
Now, how did you two meet?
Todd applied for the Men of Mortuary's calendar and got selected.
Oh, that's how you met, because you were both on the calendar?
Yeah, he said I did the start of the calendar.
The
calendar in 2006, and we did 2008. So in 2007, we did another press release, and Todd applied. And actually, the picture that he sent in, we kind of passed on twice. And then called him up, and he came out, and he's on the cover of Men of Mortuary.
And that's how you met. So you've known each other 4 years.
You hear that, David?
Yeah.
Me over twice. Look, now I'm on the cover of his calendar, and we wrote a book together, so.
Yeah.
A little bit of
happened early
there.
What's been the worst day, each of you separately now, the worst day of your jobs? Is there one day in particular that was just the worst you've ever had?
Emotionally?
Emotionally or physically, whatever, you know, one that stands out.
emotionally,
the alarm goes off.
For me, I wouldn't say the worst day. Worst day sometimes has nothing to do with the job, but you kind of take stuff to work. But if it was like the most emotional, was a woman that I took care of this woman's husband who was at the gym and just died. He was like 44, but she was my age at that time, about 40. And we connected big time and called each other, talked a lot. And I went in bed one night and I got a call from her neighbor and she said, "Hey, Christy died." And I go, Christy, who? Well, the woman that I had just helped was killed in a car accident 2 months after her husband died. And I found myself taking care of the same lady that I was joking with and just planning her husband's funeral, and then going right back to the same church where she and I set everything up. That was a really difficult day.
Now, is that in the book? Because that's similar to a story that's in the book.
I think that story is pretty similar, perhaps, in the industry, because we all kind of have stories like that. But that, I didn't write about that myself.
It reminded me of that story that's in the book about the woman that...
Oh, yeah, and, you know, like the Windsor or Prince Albert, the story about tying the tie.
Mm-hmm.
I think every single Undertaker would tell you the same thing. I mean, that story is like archetypal. You know, so some of these stories are similar, you know, because a lot of us have similar experiences.
Right. It's interesting you mentioned the Windsor knot thing, because I was watching a movie last night where a guy was preparing for his death and he was laying out his clothes and he had made a Windsor tie. Isn't that weird that you would talk about that? And I just happened to see that last night. I'm making all these connections in my brain right now, but it's when you said that, that's what struck me first, that the people actually do prepare for their death sometimes.
I have families that come in and bring their own clothing and bring me details and plan the color of the flowers and down. And I honestly think you should spend more time living, but some people think that's very important to them. And maybe there isn't family, and they're afraid that, you know, nobody's going to follow through. So some people actually bring me the clothing before they pass away.
And the one story in here about when the guy walked through the door and you thought it was the dead body. That's a classic. It turned out to be his twin brother.
Yeah.
That's a perennial favorite in the book.
That's the one.
Sorry. These stories could go on for a very long time because there's just so many of them. If I could share one that's not in the book, it would totally let you understand how serious things can get and how you sometimes have to just rip the carpet from underneath the family to make it make sense.
Mm-hmm.
A woman came in and she was standing in the lobby. That's called a walk-in, when they walk in without an appointment.
Right.
And she's just standing there crying, and went up to her and she goes, "My daughter just died. And but there's something very important about my daughter you need to know." And I go, "Well, what's that?" She goes, "I don't know. So I brought her in the office. We started the arrangement. She goes, "Oh, I remembered. My daughter, she did it again. She drew a blank. But tonight, it's going to come to you at the right time. This is completely normal for your brain not to be working." So we finally get to the part that I'm really uncomfortable. Now, this lady is devastated. Her daughter is like 40-something years old. And we get to the part of the cost of the funeral. And my mom and kid at $4,900. And she goes, "Oh, I remember." She goes, "My daughter is missing a leg." And I just stopped and I looked at her and I said, "Same price." And she just laughed. And thought that was the coolest thing, that somebody could make her laugh at a point where she thought she never would again. Kind of like what happened to me.
Isn't that interesting? Because you think...
Because she's thinking of like, it was going to be cheaper.
That's interesting because you think they're so upset, but, humor goes so well, even when you are upset, when you can suddenly laugh in the middle of your crying. It does...
Know, things get so serious, like in an argument or whatever, and you all of a sudden just start laughing. I mean, it's okay, I'm just a nutty one, but it just sometimes that's just what has to happen.
Now, how many stories did you have to pick from, to pick the ones that are in this book? I mean, did you have thousands to pick from, or how many?
How many did we have, Todd?
Originally, there was probably close to 90 ideas. I mean, because they all weren't full stories. Or, you know, some of them were just kind of random thoughts or ideas that you couldn't really make into a full cohesive story. We boiled it down to 60 stories would be the first draft, and then chose the 50 best. To weeded out some of the weaker ones to make the book that you'd have in your hands today.
Yeah. So you both agreed on which 50 were the best.
Yeah, and our editor certainly had some input. And when I say certainly had some input, kind of picked for us.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
About which ones would make the best stories. They're all great. Right. I mean, I can't think of any that I didn't enjoy reading. I mean, they're just really...
Let me ask you a question, David.
Yes.
Was there anything that jumped out at you that you said... wow, I never thought of that before. Because I'm always interested to hear, what other people's perception of the job is, and then I'm interested to find out, like, what you think is strange.
Well, I think, overall, I would say that I didn't realize what exactly you guys really go through day to day. I mean, it seems easy, but it isn't. I mean, there's so much involved with what you do. There's so many emotions involved. There's so many people involved with temperaments and also, you know, what kind of a background these people have and what kind of a funeral they have. I mean, it's different by different religions and different colors of people. It could be a totally different funeral for each one. And I guess you really don't think about that too much. I mean, when I first read the book, I thought, well, this is going to be so depressing. I'm going to feel depressed for days afterwards. And I found myself being so fascinated by what was happening and intrigued by all the different stories that I thought, well, this wasn't so bad after all. But I know there were things that when I was reading them, I would think what you said, but I can't, off the top of my head, remember one as we're speaking right now. But what have people said?
Different people have different reactions. There seems to be some stories in the book that people are drawn to, just for whatever ridiculous reasons. A lot of my friends seem to enjoy the patch out. I think that's just their sophomoric sense of humor. And somebody the other day was it you talking about spare donuts?
What was it?
The one where on spare donuts, the woman on the side of the road trying
yes.
to get the tire.
Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah.
Why am I laughing at these stories? They should be serious, and yet I'm finding myself laughing, thinking of the body that slipped out of the back and where he was stuck there and couldn't get help. The evil receptionist story.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry.
I'm not understanding which story that is.
There's one where the guy took it. I think he was getting it from the hospital or was it a nursing home? And the body somehow, it was icy. And the body fell out and he couldn't pick it up by himself. And he went in to ask and there was nobody there that would help him out.
Yeah, the nurses were seldom, they won't lift.
Right, I mean.
Once you left their property, they probably don't. They won't go outside. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
It's amazing how people's reactions to things change when you tell them you have a dead body in your car. It's like everything changes.
It does work when you're speeding.
Oh, it does?
It does work when you're coming over the border here in California. If we have to go to Mexico to pick up a body, we'll have the other funeral director, who maybe the person's in Mexico that passed away, and we meet them at the border and do the exchange. And then when we come back into California from Mexico, we have the body with us, and the big box, and they're like, okay, pull over, and they go, what is it? Oh, it's a dead body. Oh, go. We don't get stuck there very long.
It's like being a police officer, you get away with everything. Not really, but...
I'll tell you, quick something along those lines, too. The other night, it's Friday night, actually early Saturday morning, midnight, 1 o'clock, and I'm, coming back from a nursing home, and, it's a DUI checkpoint. I pull up, big Suburban, lettered on the side of the Suburban, it's the firm name. I'm wearing a suit, cop shines in my eyes. Why are you dressed up? I'm working. Well, what do? I just jerk my thumb into the back of the truck, as light travels back there, and then, okay, continue on. It's like, okay, buddy, what do you think I'm doing driving around in a truck wearing a suit at 1 a.m?
Well, they must get a lot of suspicious characters in that area. I can only imagine. But I'm looking through the list here of the ones that I wrote down, just the ones that intrigued me enough to say this is one that we need to talk about. There's, well, I've got, like I said, over 15 here, but they're unusual. Each one's unusual in its own way. What was your first day on the job like for both of you?
My first day on the job.
When you were full...
so young.
Do you remember it? I mean, was it memorable?
It felt strangely scary, but strangely comfortable. And I just knew that that's what I was supposed to do. And
how did you know? That's an interesting comment. How did you know it was what you were supposed to do?
My dad's suicide, that's what, you know, got set. I just knew that that was what I was supposed to do.
Right.
I'd never been in a funeral except for my dad's funeral, and I, you know, I was 12. And then when I turned 18, I went to a firm, and you're too young. I mean, I had braces, my ears stuck out, and I was too skinny, and they'd come back maybe in 4 or 5 years. And the next day, I just showed up and started sweeping their parking lot. They go, there's a weird kid out there sweeping the parking lot. I just kept doing it until they paid attention to me, and then they invited me in, and I just started. They let me start my apprenticeship, and I just got right into it. I just felt comfortable.
Now you've been doing it for 22 years.
And I calculated, but pretty close, yeah.
Pretty close, 20 years. But you've never regretted doing it.
No, I cannot imagine doing anything else. I feel like it's such a blessing that, you know, we're designed to lose family members, and we're designed in the back of our minds to lose your parents. I just happened to use mine at each age, and in a way that put me on a path of what I was supposed to do to maybe probably help myself in dealing with my dad's suicide, but also to help people that are going through the same thing. I mean, I really excel with children that have a parent that commits suicide when they come in and are sitting there. That just looks like me, 12 years old, and I know, I don't know how they feel, but I know how I felt, and I just kind of lent a hand that this will pass, and you'll fill this void with other things.
Right. That's amazing. I mean, to hear you say that, and I know you really mean that, and to know that you're that compassionate and want to help other people, that's really great. I mean, I think we should all be like that. And so, what was your first day like, Todd? Were you an apprentice to start off?
No, I started part-time. I kind of fell into the job almost. You know, I started, you know, washing and waxing the cars, and then I started part-time, liked it, and then it segued into full-time, and I, you know, got more and more responsibilities, and then I went to school, and, you know, the rest, as they say, is history.
Right. So there was no scary moments with a dead body at first or anything? Didn't freak you out?
No, I've always been very comfortable. You know, there's a lot of superstition, you know, regarding the dead, you know, from the general public. But, you know, it's one of those jobs I think you can either do or you can't. You know, you're either comfortable doing it or you're not. And, you know, I don't necessarily know if you can learn to be comfortable. Maybe you can, but... it always just felt very natural to me. And, you know, from, you know, when Ken and I have talked, you know, over the course of our friendship, it sounds like, you know, it's been the same way for him. He's always known. It's always been his calling.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I wouldn't say it's been my calling, but I just, you know, I started working at a funeral home, and it was just very natural for me to do so.
Do you think there are people in the funeral business who shouldn't be?
Oh, God, yes.
Well, you're both laughing at that,
huh? Oh, my God, yeah.
And we're not going to name any names, but, I mean...
Oh, no, absolutely not, but...
Give me a name.
Give you one name, Ken McKenna.
No. I wonder what Ken's going to say now.
Oh, that's funny.
But give me an example of somebody who shouldn't, and tell me the way they act. I mean, I don't want a name or anything. I'm just somebody that... Or...
I mean, I think that they're working at a department store, or... It's not a job. It's absolutely not a job. It's a compassionate service, and either you get that or you don't.
Right.
You can come to, people come here with all these degrees and all that sort, and it's just really to treat people. And
right.
It's more about communicating with them and being honest with them. And, you know, but there's some people in every industry that shouldn't be. If there's mechanics, that should mechanics, there's morticians, there should be morticians, and etc. I just think, honestly, the bad ones in our industry are the ones that seem to get interviewed when they screw something up, and then everyone has the poor taste of funeral directors in their mouth because, you're dealing with people that are really emotional.
Right. Do you feel the same way, Todd, basically?
Yeah, and it seems to a lot of times boil down to money. You know, sometimes a good undertaker is very compassionate, but they're not a good businessman. And then they might get themselves into a bind financially and start doing something they shouldn't financially. And it kind of snowballs.
Like right
now. That seems to...
I'm kidding.
that seems to be the biggest, thing we see in our trade journals, our trade magazines, newsletters. You know, this person's been, caught stealing this money from this trust fund. You know, money that was set aside for a pre-arranged funeral. And like Ken said, it's the bad apples that ruin it for 99.5% of us honest, hardworking, compassionate undertakers.
Right. Have either of you ever done a funeral for somebody famous, a name that we would know?
No.
Have you, Todd?
No.
Nobody? But you must have had big funerals where thousands of people showed up.
I've had services that were high profile, meaning that it was a murder, or maybe the person was missing and then they were found, and like the whole community has been involved with it emotionally. So, I mean, things like that. But no, I haven't gotten anyone.
Or a pillar of the community could be high profile.
Right.
Fascinating. Somebody that would be, locally known, but, certainly not regionally or even nationally known.
Right. I like the
story. Big services.
I like number 12, the story about the glass eye and the dentures. That one really cracks me up. People are going to have to read these stories. I don't want to give away too much about it. But
yeah,
just whet their appetite.
Yeah, I can't tell them all the details, but some of them just bring a smile to my face just thinking about when I read them. Are you guys both big readers? Or do you have time to read?
I'm not a big reader, honestly.
I read all the time.
So what does an undertaker read? I don't know what made me ask that question, but I'm suddenly very curious. Well, I know you read, we talked the other night about some current authors, and you do read some well-known authors.
Yeah, I read a lot of popular fiction, kind of whatever I can get my hands on or strikes my fancy. Usually it's whatever somebody's recommended to me most recently.
Mm-hmm.
I just read this good book, and I'll go pick it up, kind of no matter what it has to do with.
Are you particular with things that have to do with funerals at all, or do you shy away from that because you see it all day?
To be honest with you, there's not that much out there, and that's one of the reasons Ken and I thought this book would be such a great idea, because the subject matter isn't covered real well, so it's kind of, there's not a lot of competition for this book out there.
Right.
People are going to go look to get a funeral book or an undertaker book. Pickens or Slim, which, really works in our favor. That being said, there are a couple of really good books out there that deal with the subject matter.
There's a series that takes place in Baltimore, and the guy's name is Tim Cockey. I don't know if you've heard of him. He wrote a whole book, a whole series of books about, I think Hearst was in the title of each one, or does that ring a bell with either of you?
Hearst you came in on.
Yes. Yep. Very funny. Look at the and mystery series. It's a definite mystery series. I remember reading them and just how much fun they were to read. Just give you a real good laugh. And of course,
have you interviewed Tim Cockey?
I think I did at one point. I seem to remember doing it, but I couldn't swear that I have. And I think he's changed his name now. He's got a different name he writes under now. But
yes, Russell Peters or something like that.
I forget the
name. His newest book is published under a pseudonym.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember that. I think he writes like thrillers now instead of mysteries. They're sort of like political thrillers, if I remember correctly. Sort of Tom Clancy-ish kind of thing. Not really spy, but just more thriller type. But I do remember his books. I can't remember the character's name, but I just remember how funny they were. And they were set in Baltimore, too.
Hitchcock, Sewell.
Now, see, if you read, you could sit there and read while you're waiting for the family, too.
You don't want to know what I was just doing. I was actually sitting here while you guys were talking, and death certificates came in from the state, and I was honestly just reading I like to read the name of the person, the age, and how they died. And it just, I would have a stack of them here, and I, honestly, that's what I was doing. It's kind of my end of the day thing, and it's just so weird how just we end up with this piece of paper.
And for some reason, I'm thinking of these weird questions, but this may sound like a weird question. Just yell at me if it is. But do you guys ever have to drag a body out of a river or anything? Do you ever have to go in and do that kind of stuff, or is that usually done for you?
In California, we have a coroner's office, and they investigate. If someone's in a river, there's something wrong. They were pushed or committed suicide or fell, so that means it's an unexplained death. So the coroner retrieves the body. And then the coroner calls us once they've done the investigation to figure out why the person passed away. So, no, I don't have to do that.
You say you don't have to? That would be quite... I can't imagine having to do that. They're kind of... I still remember in high school, my teacher, for some reason, I have no idea to this day why she did it. She was explaining to us what it was like to drag a body out of a river and what happens to the body when it's been laying in the river for so long. And to this day, it has stuck with me as the most horrifying description of it. And I won't go into detail, believe me.
Was it at third grade?
I was in high school. I think I was in like seventh or eighth grade. I hope I wasn't in third. It was definitely high school. But you know, she wasn't like that normally. It just happened. I think maybe her husband did it for a living or something. But I remember her describing in detail what the body went through and what it looked like. And it was just, I couldn't believe she was saying all this stuff. And it was like, oh, I don't know if I'll be able to eat lunch now. It was quite quite interesting.
I mean, we definitely steered away from the morbid and the gross and all that in the book. I mean, you know, most people don't have the stomach for it. Who wants to hear about it, honestly?
Right.
You know?
Absolutely, I agree. But you know, it's funny how things stay with you for a long time afterwards.
It traumatized you.
Now, with the stories that weren't published, will there be another book with the rest of them in it, do you think?
Well, of course there would.
Hmm?
I mean, like I said, stories could go on. And,
right.
And,
so you guys, are you going to do another book together?
Oh, yeah. I didn't use that.
Yeah.
It is going to happen.
Yeah, absolutely. You know what? Honestly, if I go to a party and people go, that's the mortician, and they're like, oh, because I've always wanted to ask you, and people share stories. So the one common thing we have is that we're all going to have to deal with this, but it's one thing that we kind of like, well, I've always wanted to ask, but I'm afraid. So I hope that people can find me approachable and ask me the questions that they always wanted to and get a straight answer.
Right. What was the question?
Oh, we're talking about years, but just I can't even think of one.
I'm just curious. What
is it true that you? Is it true that the hair and nails keep growing after death?
Oh,
it felt stupid asking. I said it's not really a stupid question. No, they don't grow. The body is really made out of water, and when the body goes through dehydration, the nails are fixed, the hair is fixed, and the tissue pulls away from the fixed objects, so it appears that the hair and nails grow when they don't.
Do you guys have any time for hobbies other than your job, or does your job really consume most of your life?
You know, writing is my hobby, it's my passion.
Writing is okay.
Work and you know, it's just something I've always loved doing, and you know, that's kind of like my, you know, release when I get home, my decompression. And you know, I come home and I'll write 1,000 words. You know, so it's really, you know, a treat for me to, you know, write a book about, you know, subject matter I know and love so well. Find my two favorite things.
Right. And how about you, Ken?
What was the question?
Now I forget the question. I'm forgetting the question.
Hobbies?
Yeah, what you do outside of work.
You know what? When he was talking, I was thinking about the hobby is the same thing for me. It's kind of like what I do. I like older houses. I like to restore old houses and old cars. And I was thinking while I was getting ready to say that it's kind of like what I do at work. It's that kind of like we're restoring the beauty, the natural beauty that's there that's been faded with time. So I like working on antique cars and finding pieces of them across the country and have them shipped together. It's almost like a puzzle, putting it back together, then drive it, and then sell it, and then move on, and the same with houses.
Well, you are really an interesting guy. I don't know what it is, but just hearing you talk, you just sound so interesting. You both sound very interesting men, and I didn't expect anything but that. What's that?
I'm more interesting than Todd, though, right?
Oh, really? Oh, that's good.
You're the golden boy.
And Todd's not disagreeing with you there either.
No, I'll let them soak up the glory. Go ahead.
Well, aren't writers supposed to be more into themselves? I mean, more introverted than people who don't write? What's that?
I don't consider myself an introverted person, but I'm certainly not as extroverted and flamboyant and bubbly as Ken.
Good thing you guys know each other so well.
Actually, you know, when I was in a meeting and somebody said, I just was at Barnes & Noble and there's a 6-foot cutout of you holding the book up at Barnes & Noble. I said, what? So I got my car and I drove up there just to make sure it was true, and there it was. And I was like,
are you kidding me? Is that the cutout you were telling me about, Todd, the other night? The displays you were telling me about?
No. I was talking about a more subdued display.
Oh, that's funny.
This is Ken. So Barnes & Noble did it because we did this very large signing party. And I apologize. Todd, can you talk for me for a second?
Oh, that's all right. We have an interruption, but that's fine.
He's still at work.
I'm trying to picture him in front of the. I'm trying to picture him in front of the 6-foot sign of himself. That's really funny.
You know, rumor has it he was having people take his picture with his cutout.
Oh, really?
Pointing at it, saying, "Who's this handsome guy?"
Oh, that's funny.
No, I just made that up, but
maybe he did. Who knows? I'm sure somebody did.
Sorry, guys.
That's just.
You back?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the nature of the business, right? So the coroner's office is here, so that's just like we talked about. It changes from moment to moment.
Right, that's really interesting. Right in the middle of the interview, we have an emergency.
I apologize.
That's okay. It's okay, because we're just about out of time anyway. But it's been really great to talk to you guys. And the book, again, is called Mortuary Confidential. So thank you so much for joining me today.
Well, you're welcome. I was just going to say, can we get a quick plug for our website? It's www.mortuaryconfidential.com.
Absolutely.
You want to tell them where they can get the book?
They can get the book, and all the bookstores have it.
Bookstores, mortuaryconfidential.com. I hope everyone enjoys it.
Yeah, I do too. And this has been David's Book Talk, and we will talk to you next time.